All right, everybody, welcome to season two of Gaming Gaiden. This is Andrew, one of your hosts, and I'm joined once again by
Mike. Here we go.
All right, so this time we're going to be talking about the JLPT, that is the Japanese Language Proficiency Test, and this is only tangentially related to gaming, but we'll try to weave some of that in there as well. But this podcast, we really try to talk about gaming and Japanese and the cross-section thereof, but sometimes there's a little bit less crossover than other times. But anyway.
Well, this is a topic that I did want to discuss because it is of interest to me, both as a gamer and as a teacher. So, you know, I study Japanese not because I need it, but because I want it. And because, you know, I had a wonderful time there. But also because I want to play video games in Japanese. I like it. I think it's nice. And it offers a good kind of challenge. It helps to keep me a little extra sharp on top of what video games already do to provide that additional mental acuity.
And you've played Chrono Trigger in Japanese, right?
That's right. Yeah. So the first video game I ever played through in Japanese entirely was Blue Dragon back when we lived in Saitama in 2000, I think it was 2007. I think because it straddled my time from Japan and coming back to America before I finished it, because it took a whole lot of time. And then Chrono Trigger, which was, I think, last 2022, January, February, maybe into March. It took me a long time. So if it's like a 20-hour game, I think it took me like 65 hours to play in Japanese. I did a lot of vocab work. And just most recently, I played through Super Mario RPG on the Super Famicom in Japanese.
Okay, cool. I can't remember the first game I played in Japanese. I keep my phone in Japanese. I try to play every game in Japanese these days. And I have for... after for a few years now. There are times where, you know, like Final Fantasy or something, where it's like the 3rd Battalion and the Garrison and many, many Senmon Yogo, you know, the technical terminology just pop up. And in sci-fi too, you know, the center magnitude and the blah, 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 you know, like a lot of words pop up that you don't know.
Yeah.
So that's when it gets a little tough for me. But other than that, you know, I've been studying pretty consistently, God, since 2005, man. It's going on 20 years now. God, it's going on so long. But, and I will, let me tell you my JLPT history, and you can go into yours. So I took it while I lived in Japan, like, let's say my... probably 2008, because I gave myself my probably 2 years. I went straight to JLPT 1. And I was, you know, I could kind of do it, but I definitely, I wasn't anywhere near passing at the same time at that time. I've never taken any of the other tests, and I've taken it 3 other times, so 4 times. I failed it 4 times. The last time I took the JLPT 1 was this past December, and I failed it by 1 point.
That's so painful, man.
So painful.
And I want to come back to that, because when we talk about some of like the validity and how it's evaluated, that's important to remember.
I'd like to go over that more probably. But, you know, I got a lot better, I think, and I'm going to take it this year again. And I am taking lessons, you know, through Zoom now with a Japanese native. And also my books were old. That was one thing I noticed. Like I couldn't find good JLPT N1 books, and they weren't on Amazon. So I found a company called Bonjinsha, which...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're good. And I'm studying with my tutor with those. So... hopefully I'll be ready. And it's a life goal of mine to pass this test, man. Everybody's like, why are you going to use it? Yeah, dude, maybe. I just want to pass it, especially since I was 1 point away. Are you kidding me? You know, and plus The other thing is, if you pass JLPT N1 specifically, maybe N2 a little bit, but like you can apply it. Well, I have a spouse visa now because my wife's mm-hmm. Japanese native. But I think mm-hmm. if you pass JLPT N1, you like can get like visa stuff or whatever much more easily.
Preferential.
Yeah, you get some preferential treatment. And people in America talk about this a lot, where resumes don't matter anymore or whatever. Well, guess what? In Japan, they 100% matter. And if you have JLPT N1 on that resume, you know, it's going to be huge. And like, I don't need Japanese for my work now, but mm-hmm. if I add it to the resume and if I ever need, you know, rather, you know, have it and not need it than need it and not have it, you know, that kind of thing. So, that's kind of my opening spiel.
I think that there's definitely a lot of emphasis put on what's necessary, and that makes sense, right? Because we're all trying to survive, you know, the existential threat that our current brand of capitalism delivers for us, right? But like, there's also the need to enjoy something and engage with it, right? We don't need to be doing gaming gaiden. We don't need to be talking about translation or video games, but we both have a love of these things and we want to share it. And that's a perfectly valid reason to do something.
I think so. I always hated hearing, even when I was a kid, I hated hearing like, why study it? I'm never going to use it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think that's so dumb. And a lot of, I don't love pragmatism, man. You know, of course it's necessary, but, in some ways, but I think sometimes there's a little bit over, people love it too much, I guess, more than I do at least. Yeah. So, I have a love hate relationship with this test. And when I pass it, there won't be a soul on this planet that won't know. I'm telling the whole fucking world, because it's been a long time coming.
I'm looking forward to it, man. I really am. So let me fill folks in a little bit, so in case you're not all that familiar with the JLPT. So it is the Japanese language proficiency test. That's usually how it's referred to internationally. But it is domestically in Japan called the Nihongo Noryoku Shiken, right? Which JLPT is a pretty solid translation of. And this test started way back in like 84 or so.
I did not know that.
It's gone through, I think it's only gone through one major revision. And I took the test before the revision.
My first time as well. They didn't have N. Yeah, it was just JLPT 1 at the time. They added the N's and there was no fifth level.
So it was, right. It was only four levels before. It was, and they were Q's. They would call it the Q, I think, internationally, rather than using an N, which is, you know, probably easier for a lot of other languages to work with, even though it's a Japanese test. So it would, the easiest test was level four, which was Yonkyu, and then Sankyu, Nikyu, Ikyu.
Right.
And then they switched that up, and they because there was a huge gap basically between three and two, they changed it up to a five level test. And now three is the pretty solid intermediate. But it's kind of like, the only tests that really matter are the level two and level one tests. These are really the tests where people are looking for college admissions and job applications. I think as things change with immigration, right, and the need for more workers to come in, then you might see like, yeah, you know what, a passing N3 is good. And if things get really bad, they might say, okay, N4 passing. It's more like N5, N4, like you're getting on the boards, you're making some progression. The actual tests of consequence for most folks are going to be the N2 and the N1, which were formerly NIKU and EQ.
Going back to the talk about like them changing up the test, mm-hmm. from what I heard, and maybe you know about this more than I do, it was a little bit easier for Chinese people because of the kanji or something. So they had to reconfigure that part of the test. And there was also like, there wasn't much testing on katakana, which, you know, we know katakana all day long, but because it's English words most of the time, but you know, if a Vietnamese person, if a Vietnamese person or whoever that's not an English native takes the test, you know, they need to be tested on katakana, those English loan words as well. Yeah. You know, it's just the same level of, well, not the same as kanji, but you know what I mean? It still needs to be tested.
It's just as far removed as for an American English speaker who doesn't know kanji. It's
like, yeah, pretty much. Right? Yeah.
Because if you look at kanji and you understand what the ideogram represents, then you can often sort of intuit the meaning. But if you don't know them, you can't. And if you take them away entirely in the case of katakana, which is usually used for loan words, then you if you don't know the word, you don't know the word. That's it. You can't figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's something I've been curious about because Japanese, you know, it seems kind of counterintuitive, kind of surprising that there doesn't seem to be a real language authority that tries to maintain the so-called purity of the language, like you see happen in France and Spain, where they sort of every so often try to say like, you know what, we need to take this English loan word out and replace it with something that is clearly understandable to a native French speaker. I'm surprised that this isn't really an effort in Japan because I've heard there's so many more loan words coming in from English particularly, but just it's like all katakana.
I've heard that average French people will just use the English loan word and they will often sort of make fun of whatever that branch of the government, the language department, will make up for it to make a French word. Like, I get it, but there is something to be said about being flexible and as a language and evolving with some flexibility. But there is, like, sometimes it feels like English is just taking over Japanese, man. Like, every other word is katakana and they forget, like, I've heard the story of like one girl, you know, asking for lingo jusu, and then the friend, the Japanese person was like, is that apuru jusu? You know, like they, you know, it's just, it's weird that that's happening. It's like, something weird happen after World War II or what is it? You know, I know we have bases there. Does that mean everybody wants to learn English so bad? But this is a TikTok video I want to make actually, probably for Gaming Gaiden, but I wonder what the percentage of English is English, you know, like it's like mostly Hebrew and Latin and French, which is Latin. Like we have so many words from those languages. So Japanese is kind of doing this now. We did this hundreds of years ago in English.
Yeah.
Because we had much
more proximity. Yeah, I mean, I think the largest percentage of our words actually come from French.
Probably. So like, you know, sometimes when people are learning Japanese, they'll be like, why is so much English in here? Why don't they just speak more Japanese? And it's just like, well, just look at, this took me a while to realize too. Just look at our own language. Yeah. We're barely speaking English most of the time. Last time English was pure, quote unquote, was 1,000 years ago when it was old English and nothing but Germanic. It was just unrecognizable.
Right. And this is the thing, right? Like this is, while that, I feel like prescriptivism. So for those who aren't familiar with this, right, in terms of language grammar, there's prescriptive grammar and descriptive grammar. Prescriptive grammar is the type of grammarian who will say like, this is the correct form. This is the correct form you must use in order to follow the conventions of the written language. That's usually referring to your academic scenarios, right? And there's descriptive grammar, which tends to describe language. Let's look at the language as people are using it, regardless of what our textbooks and you know, traditionalists have said. And so there's always going to be this kind of balance. And the thing is, if you want to ensure intelligibility for a language down the line, you need those prescriptivists trying to sort of hold fast to the structures. It's never going to work. It's absolutely never going to work. And that's why it's even more important sometimes to keep that prescriptivism going, because it is a failing endeavor. It always will be. It'll never actually be the case. But that's why you got to do it, to try and slow the change of language to the point where like people can keep up with it.
It's funny whenever you talk with Japanese people of like around our age or younger, You know, there's quite a lot of katakana.
Yeah.
The older you get, there's like a few words where you say the katakana word that everybody else is understanding. And the old people don't even know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's some like, do you know abeku?
No. Is that a store?
No. Abeku comes from avec, which in French, it's just with. I mean, it's an older word for couple.
Oh, wow.
This is an almost antiquated word for couple, because I think nowadays they will just say kapuru. But I've heard, you know, when I'm with my wife in Japan, mm-hmm. some, you know, oba-san called us abeku. And I was like, what is that? So yeah, like, you know, even some katakana gets changed in and out and stuff.
The old preferred loan word.
Yeah, there's a few of those, man. But anyway, let's get back to the test. Sorry, I digress.
Right. No. These are all, you know, important things, because it's important to think about these things when you're thinking about a language test, right? So the JLPT is meant to test your Japanese language skills, but it's going to be designed by a group of likely prescriptivist grammarians who are sort of conservative academics. So this kind of language test usually is very skewed towards academic language, traditional language. There might be another word instead of avec or kapuru that is preferred, right? And that's what's going to show up on the test. And you might think like, well, I've lived in Japan for 3 years and I've never encountered this word, right? And that's kind of one of the weird things that happens with the validity of exams, is you've got to recognize, and people always need to recognize this regardless of the test, not just the JLPT. I'm talking SATs, TOEFL, whatever it may be, exam, entrance exams, or even your classroom exam. They're written by human beings, and they're going to have biases. They're going to reflect what those people think is important. And so when you approach a test like the JLPT, you can't just assume that this test is perfect. No test is, right? So it's going to have its strengths and weaknesses. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't really think about, because they look at the scores that they get and they might feel that they're failures because they've failed the test. But in a lot of cases, I would say the tests have also failed the test takers. I think that the JLPT, and this is, you know, I am not an expert on the Japanese language. I took the JLPT multiple times. I've only passed JLPT 3. So okay. I'm still working towards level 2. But I haven't been able to take it because the pandemic meant that we couldn't take it in my region. And it still hasn't come back.
Oh, not at all. Okay. Yeah, no. LA, I think, used to have it twice, but it's only once now.
No, I'm pretty sure America has only had it once. And that Canada has offered both time slots, the July and the thing. But I don't know. Things have changed through the years. So I'm not sure. But traditionally, as far as I knew, in New York, I was only ever able to take it in December.
Yeah, it's generally in December.
And that's the case right now as well. So this test, right, which is hugely consequential for a lot of people, right? They need that level 2 test to be accepted into a college. They need that level 1 for particular, maybe a high level translation. Even Jeremy Blaustein was like, oh, I never passed the level 1. I just passed level 2, got to work. And then it's like, okay, well, my work now speaks for itself, right?
Dude, I swear to you, man, this is another situation going back. Well, we were talking about this off air, I guess, but it feels like back in the day, you could probably pass in two and just start doing it. But like, I swear, dude, like I show people like the N1, like me getting close to N1 and all that. It feels like no one gives a shit until you pass N1 anymore these days. I've been at a convention actually for translating comics or something. It was a comic convention. And I asked the people that were translators, like, can you at least get some sort of apprenticeship or anything under if you have N2? And they said, no, it needs to be N1. Like,
this is, yeah.
Because there's more people than ever in this field too now. Yeah.
Right. This is now more of a competitive field because there's more people in it. So now we're just going to this is the thing about standardized testing, right? It's always like, let's just weed out more than half of the applicants by just making this cutoff point. And in some ways, the cutoff point can be arbitrary, you know, and in a lot of ways, they might be losing a lot of great talent because they're only looking at a standardized exam. Now, this is the weird thing, too, about this test is it's not entirely a standardized test, because if it were that, then you would just get your results like that, right? Your answer is correct or your answer is wrong. It's all multiple choice, right? So why aren't you getting your answers right away? And that's because the JLPT does go through human scoring as well.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so this is the thing. They, in order to make sure that these tests are sort of, that the old test is still valid against the new test, right? There's also this idea that we have to make sure that people are scoring in a way that makes sense. We're trying to prevent the possibility, because it's multiple choice, that someone has gotten lucky and happened across more than, in the old test, it was like you needed a 60% basically to pass, right? Oh, they got pushed over the mark by luck. And then you get into a situation where you need the language and you don't quite have it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's someone going through these tests, looking for patterns in your answer choices of what's correct, what's wrong. And then ultimately, this is why I think it's really crazy that in your case, you failed by one. Someone had to look at your test and decide that however successful you were in one area and however much you had trouble in another area, they decided that you had to be put one below, basically. Because it's not a simple matter of I got X number correct, I got X number wrong.
I did not
know someone that. Someone has to go through it and be like, all right, is this real? Are these results accurate? Is this going to work? And so someone had to look at it and say, this is going to be a failing score. And that's where it really hurts. it's always going to be that case, the ones that are right on the line. And, you know, in an educational environment, when a test is very consequential, particularly in the situation of a test that is only offered once a year to people, I would generally take the approach of err on the side of promotion, which is a phrase that I picked up from an old supervisor of mine. You know, when I had those borderline students where I was like, I think this student can do all right, but like the numbers are slightly under. And it's like, well, you know, are there things you can find in other areas of their academic expertise that would make up for that 1 to 2 point deficit? You know, and I'd be like, well, absolutely. And he'd be like, then give them that 1 to 2 point deficit.
Well, that's because good.
Because in terms of, you know, progression through life in schooling, in high school and everything, you don't want to be costing people years of their life because they missed one point when you know that there's more to this person than that test. And that is the problem with these kinds of tests, right? Is you often just get reduced to the number. And, you know, that company that's looking at applicants and they say, oh my God, we've got 2,000 applicants. We can't get through 2,000 applicants. What do we do? Boom, cut the N2 out. It's only N1 or better. Okay, now we're down to 200 applicants. Can we look at that? Yes. Okay. That's where we're going to go. And then, it means they might've lost out on someone like Jeremy Blaustein.
What was your best, what's generally your best subject in the JLPT?
Listening, which is funny.
Really?
Because I would regard myself as a very poor listener. I'm terrible. I'm terrible at listening in English. And
I wouldn't say that. I don't think you have any problem.
Well, here's the thing, right? So to those folks at home listening or watching, Andrew and I were talking a little before the show. I didn't really start speaking very much until I was in about fourth grade. And the reason for a lot of that is, you know, other than, you know, my social development and language development, was it had a lot to do with me not really feeling confident in what I was hearing and interpreting. And the reason that I came to be more comfortable and confident in listening and speaking was that I was a really strong reader. And I spent years and years and years of reading all sorts of stuff for myself personally for pleasure before school started forcing me to read all the time. And that's what really informed my listening. So the vast majority of what I do when I'm listening is sort of already starting to predict what someone's going to say based on context and past things I've read and experienced.
Okay.
So the weakness for me in Japanese is like, I don't have enough breadth of knowledge with reading and just different scenarios in the language to really know for sure what someone's going to be talking about. Luckily with the JLPT in this kind of test environment, they're usually kind of limited in the kinds of scenarios that they present, and that helps. But yeah,
okay.
I am a weak listener. I watch everything with subtitles, and I always have. I grew up with my grandparents too, and they always wanted the captions on because they couldn't hear. But I liked it because I could always follow because I was always reading instead of just listening.
That's my weak point is the listening, and also the long reading. Like if it's a page long, I think I didn't grow up reading a whole lot, but was weird because I was good at grammar and spelling, which transfers over into my good points in Japanese, which is the grammar and the kanji. Like I have those no problem pretty much for the test at least. And, but listening, it's just, I find it so difficult at times. I still do. And the reading, man, I think I read one book for pleasure growing up, you know, maybe it's undiagnosed ADD. And if it is, I don't have much ADD outside of, reading, I guess, but I just, there have been times where I've read the passage in Japanese and I felt like I got it pretty much as I would get it in English, but I still get the questions wrong. Just because my regular reading comprehension just in general isn't great for my age.
Right. So this is something when you told me earlier in the year about the score, I was like, to me, there are two terms, right? There's the false positive and a false negative. False negative is when someone fails the test and they shouldn't have, and a false positive is when they pass when they shouldn't have. And to me, that sounded very much like what I would usually classify as a false negative. And when I see a false negative like that, I tend to think there's an issue, not with the language skills, but with the test-taking skills. And this gets back to what I was saying earlier, that right, tests are not infallible. They represent biases, and there are also very just idiosyncratic aspects to their design.
Well, they talk about like
familiar with how they work
in the long passage parts. The test taking strategy is to just read a sentence before the question or whatever. And then when I do that, I still don't know what in the heck they're talking about. Like to me, no. I really feel like I need to read the whole thing for me to get it. Mm-hmm. All this, just read the question, just read the question and read a sentence before where it's asking. Like, okay. I feel like I just cannot do that.
No. So one of the things, right, is I've seen people complain about this and be like, oh, it's not that hard if you know it. And that's true. If a language test is easy for you, it's because you are so far above the level that it is testing. It's basically
that. Yeah.
Right. If I sat for the TOEFL, I'd probably get a very high score and think like it's not that bad because I have a high level of English language proficiency. Right. And that's
what you're native speaker.
But when it comes to this, so like for those not entirely familiar, right, the test breaks down. It used to be three categories of 400 points and it's 60% to pass. You had writing vocabulary was 100 points. Listening was 100 points and reading grammar was 200 points. And that's where we're finding, like, they were finding false positives with a lot of Chinese test takers because their reading was worth 200 points and it would just drive the score right up.
Right.
Because they were familiar with the characters. Let me take a quick look. I've got the thing here. So now it's vocabulary and grammar, which is under the language knowledge category. That's 60 points. Reading is 60 points and listening is 60 points. The passing marks change at the different levels of the test. So for N2, you're basically looking at 50%, which is a 90 out of 180. And you have to have your scores distributed in each section. So it's 19, 19, and 19. That's the minimum you could have. If you scored perfect listening and reading, you'd have 120 points. But if you got a zero in language knowledge, vocabulary, grammar, then you'd still fail the test because you need to have enough in each category.
Yeah. Right. I knew that.
So looking at the reading section, right? It sounds to me like there's only two real possible things that I could recommend to you speaking as a language teacher, right? Basically, you either need to, it's like lifting weights, right? Or you're going to run a marathon. The marathon is what, 26 miles? Is that right? I've never run a marathon.
In 28, I can't tell. I think. I don't know. I don't like running.
In any case, okay, let's say you're going to run a 5K. Okay, practice 7K.
Right.
If you're going to take this reading test, you need to be reading. Just read every day. Find a book you like. Keep going with it. Find a breadth of materials, right, that deal with some of the subjects that might be in here. A little bit of science reading. Maybe do the news. Do a newspaper, right? So you read an article.
I do need to do that. You know what's been great for my listening specifically is all the YouTube channels, dude. Yeah. So many great Japanese YouTubers now. We talked about you know, getting NHK somehow over here. Remember Slingbox? That's dead now, but we looked into it. Like, we were trying to sling NHK from my parents-in-law house, yeah, our apartment in Japan. And it's like, we couldn't get that to work, but it's just like, why would we even need that? Like, Japanese YouTube is like the thing now, and it's so good. And it's,
that's true.
I get so much listening, and with the subtitles they always put, like Japanese TV does.
Yeah.
It's so perfect. Like, I feel angry and jealous at learners now, because we were in Japan just before this started to really take off. Because, like, I was in Japan, God, 2006, YouTube came out in 2005. You know, I mean, yeah, we were in hog heaven with that Denshi Jisho, that electronic dictionary for the DS.
Sonomama Rakubiki Jiten on the DS.
Yeah,
that's how I played through Blue Dragon.
That was our thing back in the day, man. And now it's like, you know, a little bit different. But yeah, it's funny to think about that stuff.
And then that dictionary also would ding me for stroke order errors. I'd be like, I can't find the kanji because I don't know the stroke order.
And also the direction of the stroke too. You know that? It'll know the direction as well.
So the first thing, right, I recommend would be just like, it's power lifting constantly in terms of reading, if that's your weakness. And like, that's my suggestion to everybody, right? It's the same thing Werner Herzog said, right? Read more. But the other thing is, I would say, like, if you're finding that the strategy of reading the sentence where the question refers to, like, of course, that's a test-taking strategy. But like, in order to quickly ascertain where the question is referring to, your reading skill needs to be that strong already, which means you'd already be past that level. If you're at the level, what you need to do to sort of streamline things, because the amount of time that you get in the reading section for N2 and N1, I don't think is really reasonable for a student of the language to fully read all of the material and all of the questions and answer comfortably. There's going to have to be time management. Yeah. So what I would say is don't worry about, under normal circumstances where people have time, I would say read the question, read the answers, then read the article, And as you go through the article, it should trigger a lot of those points.
So you're big on reading the answers first, question and answer first.
It depends on the design of the test. In the case of the JLPT, though, I think most N2 and N1 test takers are not going to be fast enough to read everything. So what I would say is, like, you can just read the questions and then go ahead and read the article. Because it sounds to me like you favor the article as the thing. Like, you want to read that whole document.
I don't, not because I love articles. It's just because I literally won't get it. It's in another language. Yeah.
That's fine. Then that's a good thing to know.
Yeah. Like,
it's a good thing to know about yourself.
I cannot like fill in the gaps. I need to read the whole thing for the most part. And probably as a testament to me not reading as a kid. I remember picking up comic books. I didn't read a lot of comics until I was an adult, man. Like, I couldn't even make my way through a comic book when I was a kid. I was bored out of my mind after like one page, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I really have pretty bad ADD with reading, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, then what I'd say is go through and read the questions before you read the passage. So read the questions. As you read the questions, maybe this is just like little mindful things a student can do. If you take a pencil, you should always have a number two pencil, right? Just like circle the key word in the question or something. It doesn't have to be like some specific incredibly focused thing that you ascertain is like the most important thing. But yeah, you want to look for some key word or something just so that it's quick reference if you need to look back at the question. So like if they're asking like, what was the reason that Johnny went swimming after 8 p.m. or something? You'd be like, oh, this was swimming 8 p.m. I circled it. And then when I'm reading, I can see that point come up and I know I'm going to link it back to that question. It's up to you if you want to keep reading. But when you encounter relevant information in the text, you can circle it or underline it or whatever and come back to it. It's kind of a thing you'll have to find on your own how you want to do it logistically, but that's the basics of it, is like read those questions, find what it is that you need to know, get them in your head before you're reading so that they start to trigger as you're reading. That's really the most basic element of it. And that's okay. I was used to working in public school setting where, you know, a student might have time and a half where they might have unlimited time to take a test. And that's in that kind of setting, I would say like, yeah, read all of the questions and all of the answers and highlight whatever you see as the key for the question, and then go back to the text. And whenever you see something relevant to it, highlight that as well. And look for some of the key things to look for in the TOEFL and like New York State Regents exams. This is for high schoolers and in English high school, but still it's still something that's commonly used in this kind of writing. Conjunctions, right? Contrast. Those are usually key points. Anytime you see something contrasting two things, it's like, you're looking at like a 90% chance that's showing up in a question. If there's a difference pointed out or even a similarity. So,
okay.
Yeah. Now, in terms of listening, I do have a complaint about the listening section of this test. I feel like they try to get people tripped up. I feel like it's not a good thing to do. And I feel like it doesn't necessarily reflect natural language in most cases. It's not just the JLPT that does this. Some of the English tests do this too, right? They'll say like, listen to this conversation between two people. What time will they meet at the playground? And it'll be like, hi, Joe. I was going to meet you at the playground today at 3 o'clock, but then my brother, he got sick. So I'm going to have to show up at 5 o'clock. Okay. Oh yeah. Okay. That's fine. I'll meet you there at 5 o'clock. No, wait a second, Joe. I just remembered I've actually got to do this other thing. So I'm going to have to meet you there at 5:30 but maybe 5 o'clock if I can make it. What time do they? And it's like, well, why are you throwing out? Why are you throwing all these detractors out there? That's what they're called, detractors, right? They're meant to mislead certain people, right? Because again, they're trying to weed people out, right?
They think that
as if that's a goal.
If you can follow that and catch all that, and when they're sidewinding and going whipping and round and all that and detracting, then you really have language mastery. That's what I gather.
That's true. But it's also like, if someone has to throw out that many detractors, right, then that person's not a good communicator. Like, and if someone, in a situation like that, right, where there's been, say, like three or four different possibilities, in a natural conversation, I'm going to just verify with the person. Be like, okay, so you want to meet tomorrow at 5:30, right? Okay, cool. See you then. Like, we're not going to just be like, oh, that's it. I only heard you say it once. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. I'll see you tomorrow at whatever time you said. Right? It's not natural. So one of my issues is usually that they set up situations that aren't really natural.
And so I agree with that. I mean, the other part about the listening test, I remember this because I took it just a few months ago. Mm-hmm. They have the CD player in like the corner of the room. I was literally on the other side of the room, the far corner, the opposite corner. You know, it was upper left. I was sitting bottom right kind of thing. And so, I mean, I did okay, but I was really like, they need to fix this going forward. And the audio, it could have been a little louder too. I didn't say anything. I didn't want to cause any shit, but next time
I think I will.
Like, I'm going to be like, look, I need to fucking move to right next to this thing. I think I will. I really will this next time, just to secure my position, because I'm just not fucking around with this anymore, man.
And this is something I used to tell my students, you know, because I was an ESL teacher, right? And like, I would be part of the administration of an exam, and I would be going around to different rooms to ensure that those students were receiving the appropriate accommodations that they were guaranteed by the state, right? If they were taking a math test or whatever, they might have the option to take it in their language, or they could listen to it two times over, or they could listen to it an infinite number of times, depending on whatever their particular learning plan called for, right? In the case of, I'm sure you've worked with audio too, right? If you're going to deliver audio to a room, let's say you're setting up a concert, you're not going to put all of the speakers on one side of the stage. Yeah. It's just asinine, right? They should be center, and they should be, if it's stereo sound, that sound needs to be in the center line to reach both sides.
So at least like, front center.
Front and center, and it should be a certain height, right? A little above the ears of the listeners. It's so that it's reaching people behind them as well.
Right.
It's just, there's always going to be these issues. And like, yeah, you have to be the nail that sticks out, because you're not going to get hammered down in these situations.
I'm not going to get hammered down a fifth time.
No.
That's for sure. This will be my fifth time taking it. I need to sign up for it, actually.
I wish that these things would go computer based, because that would take care of a lot of these accommodations. But
it's Japanese,
you never know,
man.
How long it takes for them to get around to these things. Yeah,
it's Japanese. Yeah, they take a while to update.
The TOEFL went computer based, I think, in like 2006, something like that.
Does the TOEFL as a test seem like an English JLPT? It's like kind of the same deal.
No, it's not quite, because it's, the TOEFL is primarily for schools. It's primarily for people looking to study at universities in English. So the material is very much geared towards that. Like, you'll get like a little science reading about, what do you call it?
Chlorophyll.
Metamorphosis. Or something like that. Yeah, and the water cycle. Like, that was a favorite topic. But yeah, you'll usually get stuff that's geared towards sort of the general liberal arts education kind of idea. A little bit of something about art, a little bit of something about science. Because that's the kind of language that you're going to encounter in a college setting.
Okay.
And then, but one thing, and this is very interesting. I would generally not consider a language test to be valid unless it had language production. The JLPT does not actually have language production. That means there is no speaking and there is no writing.
Yeah.
Those things are hard. Those things are hard. If you're administering a test globally to, I don't know how many people they give this test to, but that means you're going to need people to read all those essays and short answers. You're going to need people to listen to all of the things that a person says. And like, I think that's great. That's what's going to give you the real validity of a test. That's what's going to tell you if a student is actually capable, but they just can't logistically do it very easily.
Yeah.
It's not a for-profit company, right? This is run through the government.
So. Yeah. Hence that passport ease if you pass.
Yeah. But what they do is they try to address language production in the vocabulary grammar section, where it's kind of like, they call them close activities, where you fill in the blank. It's like, oh, well, if you know this, then maybe you could write a sentence, you know? So it's not ideal, but I think it's probably the best they could do in a multiple choice format.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I feel like there needs to be something in conjunction with the JLPT, or perhaps an alternative to the JLPT that really does these other things. Because like the TOEFL has speaking, they have writing. So
yeah, no speaking. They've always just done it. No speaking in JLPT. It's weird, but that's how it is.
No. So yeah, it's not a perfect test. No test is. You know, there's the same general strategies for all standardized tests and language tests really apply here. I think the major issue that I have otherwise is that it's only offered once a year for most people outside of Japan.
I'd love for it to be offered in the summer as well. Just like if I failed, yeah. I could just take it again quickly. I would just keep taking it until I passed.
I took it in 2019. And I thought like, hey, that's cool. You know, I'm on the boards for N2. I'll see what I can do in 2020. And now it's 2023. And the nearest place that has the test now is about 200 miles away.
Well, where?
If I want to drive there, it's like 2 tanks of gas. I have to get a hotel.
Where is it? Can you say?
The nearest test to me is in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the University of Michigan.
Oh man. Well, if you know what?
And the
if
thing
you
is,
really it, feel like you can pass, like you're going to murder that test, you might as well just drive out and take it.
Look at this. This test used to be like $65, I think. And now it went up to $100. So the fee has increased quite a bit, really. That's a big jump. It's about 200 miles away. So I'm looking at 2 tanks of gas, basically. I'm going to have to refill. So let's just say $50 in gas. Okay. And then I have to get a hotel. So at best, I'd say I could like get $100 for the night, right? Because I can't do that trip of 3 to 4 hours on the same day I'm taking the test and come home.
No, not
it's
at all.
It's not going to work.
Not at all.
And the other thing is, it's only offered once a year, and it's offered in December, which could be snow, and that could be a problem. So like I might pay for my test for $100. I might pay for a hotel for $100. And then I might find these conditions are not really good for driving. I'm going to have to pass on the test. So I'm really stuck, you know? So it's just like, well, if you're going to offer it once a year, please offer it in the summer.
I know,
the
right?
The weather is better.
That would make a lot of sense.
We could still get thunderstorms and stuff, but like, you know, I'm safer in the summer than I am in the well, it's not technically winter, December 2nd, but it's approaching it.
Well, close enough. So, would any time in December, I would personally consider winter.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we know the solstice is the mark of winter, but like the weather usually comes in a little ahead of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
That's right.
So, yeah, there's some issues there. you know, in terms of, though, like preparing for the test, if anybody's interested in taking it, I have looked at some resources. And again, like I said, I'm not a Japanese language expert, but I have a great deal of experience working with educational materials. So I would say some of the best resources you can find out there are the Nihongo no Mori, which actually, Andrew, you put me onto that early on. I like
their materials. Good.
I think they do a really good job.
They have a good app. They have a good, mm-hmm. You know, YouTube channel that's divided up by the numbers and the teacher's cute. So, yeah, there's that. Well, sorry to add that in, but
they've got, I mean, they might have new teachers now. So, like, it's always changing.
That's true. It's changing. Yeah.
But they've got like a full course now you could sign up for. They've got the app is robust, and they also have a book, and the book is affordable. You could buy it on Amazon.com, meaning the US Amazon. It's like $25, and it covers all of the different so-called modalities of language. It's got a vocabulary section, a grammar section, reading and listening, whereas most books separate it for each one. And this book is only like $25. That's the Nihongo no Mori, like Kono Isatsu de something Gokaku suru. It's just one big book, and you pick the level you want to take, and it's all inclusive. It's very nice, because if you're only looking to spend so much and have access to all the materials you need, it's there. It's mm-hmm. nice. If you do want to like focus on different areas, I like the Shinkansen Master series is nice.
That's what I had, but I feel like they didn't update. Have they had a book recently? You know, they were really great. Sure, like 10, updated. Not to, you know, knock your list as you're saying it, but mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was an excellent study book, like the best mm-hmm. JLPT book you could get, but I feel like they haven't updated in 10 years or more.
So for me, the thing about Shinkansen Master is I feel like it's a very good resource. It's got a lot of materials to go through. I feel like their explanations are pretty good, but on anything that gets a little bit hazy, a little gray area, I feel like you're best off using Shinkansen Master with a teacher. I would not say that that's like the best for independent study. I do think you will need the insight of an educator here and there with that. I think that the Nihongo no Mori gives you a lot of options to work on your own, which is pretty nice. And then I also mentioned I think it's Nihongo Sou Matome.
Mm-hmm.
That's another series. That one is great if you have limited time and you just want to do a little bit each day. The Sou Matome series is just so perfectly paced for that. It's really nice. It's not as in-depth, not as heavy as the Shinkansen, but like it's very good. And the material that you will use is better than the material that you won't use. So always right. The case.
I've used those as well. Those are good.
Yeah. And lastly, you know, as someone who just constantly wants to promote reading, to say like, that's the big thing. I mean, this is really me. Like I did Japanese study. I got back into it because I really needed to have empathy for my students when I was teaching English as a second language. Right. But it's also because I need to really understand the modalities of language, how they function from the perspective of a student. And the way I am a student of Japanese is because I want to play video games in Japanese. That's really the primary goal. I have like nothing else I really need. There's not a lot of people to talk to around me, unfortunately. There's some folks. But like, it's really just like, I love games and it's really fun and it keeps me sharp. So I recommend if you're not going to play games, there's also something called Satori Reader.
Okay.
This thing, it's like working with a teacher through reading. The stories are not always what I would consider to be of high interest, but high interest is subjective. They have a lot of different passages, and let's say a story might take like 70 pages, but they're not really like full novel pages. And in each page or chapter, there's highlighted vocabulary words. There are things you can highlight for phrases to examine the grammar. And the English explanation of it is really very much written as if a teacher were there explaining it to you. It's a great self-study resource. It really is. It's expensive. You got to pay a subscription for like a, you know, a monthly fee or a yearly fee or whatever. And they go on sale every now and then, but it's excellent. It's the best I've ever seen of that type of thing. And I feel like I haven't seen enough in that arena, honestly.
Okay. That's cool. This is great stuff, man. There's one called Language Learning with Netflix, which is a browser extension. I guess you'd have to watch Netflix on your computer, but you turn on like a foreign show, whatever language you're learning. And then it's like a combination of that Li Kai Kun, you know, like mouse over a word. It's like that with the subtitles. And it's like, it's a learning thing that you can do while watching your favorite Netflix shows. So that's another one.
Yeah,
That could be fun. So, those were all the ones in your list? Did you have more?
Yeah. So just to clarify further with Netflix, it is a really good resource if you're into the shows from Japan. Like I think there weren't that many shows I was really into, but if you look for a show with Netflix originals, those tend to have good subtitles for all languages. So you could potentially watch it with your native language subtitles and then switch it over to Japanese, or you could leave it with no subtitles and then watch it again with subtitles in Japanese. It's really nice. I only dropped it because it got really expensive. Netflix kept jacking up the prices, but like, yeah, it's a fantastic resource. It really is.
I turned on
just like watching cheap stuff. It's great.
I watched the cheap plan with the commercials.
Mm.
It's like half the price. Plus Netflix has sort of become the one we watch the least. Mm. YouTube is what we watch the most, honestly, dude. I mean, it's just got the most stuff. It's hard to compete with that, with all the user generated stuff there, you know, power to the people and whatnot.
That's what I watch the most too, honestly. I'm always watching some random video game thing. It really is.
Oh man. Happy Console Gamer, Metal Jesus, John Riggs, whoever. Top Hat Gaming, man, all those guys, like love them, man.
Watching something on YouTube.
It took me a while to get into it. I was like, oh, this is like the new TV. Like that's the thing with me being an elder millennial, and you're this way, you're the youngest Gen X. That's absolutely possible. You're really on the cusp, but like I'm like young enough to get into it, but I'm old enough to be really slow to get into it. You know, that's just how it's been for me. But anything else about the test?
Yeah. So the one last thing I'd like to address is that I feel like it's kind of disappointing that not enough things have the level in mind. Now let me clarify that a little bit. When you deal with texts, right, in English language education, there's basically reading levels. And so you might, if you're teaching a third grade class, you're going to have a list of books that are at what's considered an appropriate third grade reading level. And you don't get enough of that when it comes to popular media, right? Like, I don't know that we have a Lexile is a brand name, but that's one of like the companies that does a reading level. I don't know that we have a Lexile level or reading level set for, say, Avengers Endgame. Like if I were a student who said, oh, I would like to study English with this movie, I don't know that I could say like, hey, this is the level it's going to be at, and this is what you should consider going into it, and this is kind of the vocabulary you need. And I feel like the JLPT, I don't really know what it's leveled against so well. And I think that like with the TOEFL, I know it's pretty clearly designed for people looking at colleges, but the JLPT is a little broader because it's used for employment as well. And I don't really know. Like, I want to play a Japanese game. The kanji are kind of all over the place. Like, yeah, with a Chrono Trigger, I would see a word and be like, I can't figure this word out. And then I'd see the kanji and be like, oh my God. I would have known that if they had given me the kanji, actually. But like, it's reading levels are a little unclear. And I wish that we could get something more strongly aligned with that in the language study for Japanese and for the JLPT, so that it could all be kind of like, we have something we can clearly target. But
there was one word in one of the Metroid games I played where it was this, I've never seen it ever again. I only seen it once in my life, but it was, I forget the reading, but it meant to die at sea. Very specific, but they were using this, you know, to die in space, obviously, but it was kind of poetic wording, right?
Yeah.
Cause it was Metroid. But, other than that, it was pretty much, you know, on my level, I guess, or a little below actually, which was cool. But, it would be very cool if they had that. I think they would need like a new board to do that or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of requires some government oversight with a lot of educators, you know, to say like, hey, you know, this is kind of the word list we kind of expect to be standard for a fifth grader. Like, they're going to be familiar with this because, you know, it's happening, right? Like, they're making decisions in Japanese media about when they are going to provide furigana, or when they're just going to write it out in hiragana and stuff for younger kids. So like, I think it would be good to formalize that and have some alignment with the JLPT. But yeah,
it'd be cool if YouTubers could at least also like on their own add their own rating, you know. Or maybe the AI and the algorithm will do that on its own eventually. Yeah. That'd be kind of interesting. Honestly, this might be a job for AI eventually. That'd be kind of cool.
Take a lot of care, you know, very careful and talented teachers before the AI could learn anything from them.
I guess so, yeah. I guess I didn't think it was too bad because those jobs don't exist. It's not taking away any jobs because those the job doesn't exist at all. But yeah, I know what you're saying. I don't know.
The AI can't do anything that people can't already do, right?
So like, you have to teach it. Yeah,
you know, if we're not even at the point where we have human beings doing this, we're pretty far out from having computers do it. But that's the computers true. Could sure as hell speed up this process.
Yeah, speed it up. Kind of get it out there. Because I mean, there's one channel called Tokai On Air. I don't know what they're saying half the time, man. And they're not like, they don't have like crazy accents. It's just, I think that they just really, it's just how they speak, man. They're just speaking some real shit. And like there's other channels like Dekakin, Hikakin, you know, even Eiga Channel.
I don't know these. I've never seen them.
Like, I can understand most of what they're saying, but then cut to Tokai On Air. I don't know what's going on, dude, half the time. I don't know what it is, man.
It's tough for a language learner out there, regardless of the language. It's
easier than ever, really, though. But it could be easier, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's up to us educators to really sort of try and narrow things down and say like, hey, we're going to make these levels. And you know, people will always push back. But like I said, with the prescriptivist grammar, like, nothing is ever going to be solid. It's not going to last forever. It's kind of silly, but like, I think it's worth it to establish something, to have something to work from.
That'd be cool. It'd help out us learners. Is that pretty much it?
Yeah. Yeah. So anybody taking the JLPT, I hope we were able to help you in some way. We wish you good luck. Absolutely. And especially you, Andrew. It's time for you to get that certificate.
Yes. Well, especially all of our listeners, let's put it that way. But yeah, I'm going to pass. Thanks everybody. Also, before we go, I do want to say like learning Japanese, well, playing video games, you know, did kick in my love of all things Japan and wanting to learn the language And again, going back to season one and my childhood, you know, and yours too, to a certain extent, like the EGM would often bring up Famitsu and, you know, the whole Japanese gaming thing and Japanese gaming, Japanese culture, you know, would pop up even in the 90s quite a bit in EGM in the magazines. And so you couple that with getting into Ghibli movies and anime in general, you know, that was really the beginning of my wanting to learn the Japanese language.
Yeah.
And, you know, them bringing up Famitsu, I wanted to read Famitsu. That was another thing, Famitsu Weekly. Now I have a couple older copies here too, and I've you know, read a couple, and it's been great. So it's been a lot, you know, kind of a bucket list item that I accomplished. I didn't read it cover to cover, but I didn't read EGM cover to cover either. It was a magazine.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, but I did, you know, read it enough to my enjoyment. And yeah, you know, I love it. And I love this. I love the cross section of video games and Japanese, you know, it's just, it's, well, we're so used to it now, but there's still something almost unlikely about it. But I love even that. I don't know what it is. So that's going to do it, right, for this episode?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, everybody, thanks for joining us for another episode in season two. I think we're, honestly, dude, we did a great job with season one, but I'm loving season two already. We're still making it as as of this recording, but I think it's great.
Yeah. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Let us know if you have any suggestions for future episodes in the comments, or, you know, anything, your JLPT experiences or whatever. Let us know. And that's it. We'll see you later. Please check out the movie that I'm working on called Metal Force. Please go to www.metalforce.ninja. to find out more about this film. It's basically R-rated Power Rangers meets Stranger Things. That's the quick pitch.